The fear of conflict is really rooted in our fear that the relationship itself doesn't hold water. So if we're fearing conflict to such a degree, what we're really fearing underneath that is we don't actually have a stable, secure foundation in which to communicate in. And that's really the bigger issue.
Hello, my friends. As always, thank you for tuning in to each new episode. I hope that this podcast helps to bring you a few moments of introspection and joy into your week, as well as the knowledge that you are not alone, even while social distancing. Whether you live alone with your family, a partner, or even a few roommates all stuffed into a tiny New York apartment, our social lives are changing, and in some cases, really being put to the test. Now more than ever, we need to take care of ourselves. We need to take care of our minds, bodies, and souls. Oftentimes, this means setting boundaries around our technology habits, work hours, and even in some relationships. When we're in isolation, we're contained in a space. In that space that we find ourselves in, it can come with its distractions, its interruptions, and quite frankly, your territory, your time, and your mental space can be filled with uninvited thoughts, feelings, and even people. All that to say that this is a metaphor for drawing boundaries. Now, I don't necessarily mean putting up physical barriers between you and everyone else. What I mean is, when you're clear on what you value and what is truly important to you and your time, it's actually easier to draw boundaries around that to protect it. That's why I brought on today's guest, Nancy Levin. She's a master coach focused on helping people pleasers and overachievers make themselves a priority and set boundaries that actually stick.
I had really lived most of my life as a people pleaser, peacekeeper, conflict avoider, not rock the boater. And so it was really a big shift for me to put myself at the center of my own life.
And that's the thing. For many women around the world, setting boundaries is not exactly a common skill. We're the first generation of women who actually have the autonomy and legal permissions to live life on our own terms. This requires setting boundaries. However, we've never been taught to do so. What I've learned is that setting boundaries is all about focusing on what you can control and sticking to the rules you set for yourself, even if you anticipate conflict arising as a result. But I've also learned that once you set a boundary, stick to it, and know that it works for you, you're one step closer to living freely and authentically, creating a life by your own design. The genie show, oh, our lonely days are gone. It's magic, I know. I think it will be fun. Come on, hello. Like we knew all along, it's time to party. The genie show. Nancy Levin, welcome to The Genie Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listen, there's so much I want to talk to you about. I was very excited when I found out I was interviewing you because just going back on what you have been speaking about and preaching about setting boundaries and self-worth, these are some themes that are equally as scary as they are rewarding on the other end. So I want to really get into the guts of that conversation. But before we go deep, let's just talk about you for a little bit. Tell the good people of the G Show what you do and a little bit about who you are.
I am a master coach. I really am focused on helping people pleasers and overachievers make themselves a priority and set boundaries that stick. So I've been a coach for almost a decade. And before that, and before I made the full transition to doing this full time, I was the event director for Hay House Publishing. So for about 12 years, spent the time traveling around the world, producing live events with the greatest teachers and speakers in the field of self-empowerment, motivation, inspiration. And it was my dream job that I never thought I'd leave until I found myself really in my own crisis, which the catalyst for my crisis was my marriage blowing up. And it was at that point that I, you know, I'd always had a backstage pass and a front row seat to all the speakers and all the teachings, but it wasn't until I was in my own crisis that I could really let everything land inside of me. And that experience really put me on the trajectory toward what I'm doing now. I ended up doing a coach certification with my dear friend, the late Debbie Ford. I decided that on the other side of that coach training, I was really unrecognizable from the woman I was when I began it. So even though I had no designs on leaving my job, and even though I never thought I'd be a coach, it became really part of my calling that I needed to help other people get free. And so a series of events occurred. Here I am now, 5 books later. And I actually just in the fall, last fall, opened up my coach training and certification program. And I'm helping other people.
Fantastic. I like how you said you've written 5 books. Only 5 books.
Only 5.
Only 5. Speaking of one of the books, which I'm particularly drawn to, one around setting boundaries. Your most recent book is called Setting Boundaries Will Set You Free, which is so true in that statement. And I think I find for women, and one thing that I've been learning in my practice and being a part of this coaching group that I am with 11 other female entrepreneurs, there hasn't been an example of boundaries set for women over time. Like, our mothers weren't taught how to set boundaries. Their mothers weren't. Their mothers' mothers weren't. It's something that we're stepping into in this generation, because we're the first generation of women who, one, have the opportunity, the permission and the legal rights to actually have it all. We can have access to healthy relationships, our own health, and also business ventures as well. We weren't able to do that 50 to 100 years ago. So I want to talk to you about boundaries and how you kind of explored this study. When did you realize it was time to start setting boundaries in your life? What were the triggers for you, Nancy?
I will say that I really didn't set a true boundary until about 10 years ago. And it was the boundary around not going back to my now ex-husband. It was the boundary around not going back and moving forward with a divorce. And, you know, it, like you said, we were never taught how to set boundaries. We weren't even taught that we were allowed to have them. And the other thing is that there's a really big misconception about boundaries. So we think boundaries are all about restriction or restraint or constriction. And I do believe boundaries are expansive. I believe that our boundaries are the way that we carefully choose and consciously curate what we want to have in our lives. And so I had really lived most of my life as a people pleaser, peacekeeper, conflict avoider, not rock the boater. And so it was really a big shift for me to put myself at the center of my own life, to really locate myself and to begin being willing and giving myself permission to make myself at least as much of a priority as I was making everyone else.
I'm curious to know, Nancy, and this is something that I've learned practicing drawing boundaries. I'm not always successful, but it does take practice and a bit of stumbling.
It does.
One of the things I realize a boundary has been crossed or a boundary needs to be put in place when I'm feeling really tense or angry in my body. What are some of the feelings for you when you know a boundary needs to be put in place?
Yeah, I mean, number one is resentment. You know, when we're feeling the resentment rising, it is a telltale sign that a boundary needs to be put into place. And we really need to pay close attention to these feelings that we're experiencing. Part of the reasons we don't set boundaries is that we've numbed out to our own feelings to such an extent that we don't even realize the way in which we are ultimately living a life that's really incongruent. So, you know, the first thing I'll say here is that one of the biggest myths about boundaries is that other people cross our boundaries. Ah. So when our boundaries are being crossed, we are the one crossing the boundary. We are the one allowing or enabling it to be crossed. And that is a really fundamental piece of information. So what that does is it moves us right out of blame and victim into responsibility and empowerment. So, you know, I have clients say to me all the time, I set a boundary, but he or she keeps crossing it. Well, he or she will keep doing whatever they do because that's what other people do. So a boundary is not about someone else needing to change. A boundary is not about someone else's behavior. A boundary is simply about what is okay or not okay for me and what I'm going to do to take care of myself, what I'm going to do to honor myself. So one of the reasons people don't set boundaries is that they don't know what to say. And the thing I'll say here, first and foremost, that I've already alluded to, but I'll just name it really clearly. My boundaries are between me and me, first and foremost. So our boundaries are between our home with ourselves. Even when another person is involved, the boundary is still between me and me. If I decide then I want to verbalize it to the other person, there's some languaging we want to check in with. And we also want to be really clear that when we set that boundary and we name how we're going to take care of ourselves, we are going to put our money where our mouth is. Otherwise, we're the little girl who cries wolf. So for example, you know, a boundary is not telling someone else what to do. A boundary is not you never, you always, I need you to. So a really easy example, and I think it's happening a lot right now with the pandemic, is yes. People think a boundary is this. People think the boundary is, Mom, don't call me 20 times a day. The boundary is not that. The boundary is, Mom, when you call me 20 times a day, I don't actually have the space to pick up. In order to take care of myself, in order to honor our relationship, I will answer the phone when I can. So it's simply saying how I feel and what I can do. Now, you know, we can even put parameters around this. Mom, I'm just letting you know that I'm going to answer my phone before 10 a.m. and after 6 p.m. So if you call between those times, I won't be answering the phone. So then if I go in and answer the phone at noon, I have crossed my boundary. My mother can call me 50 times if she wants. That's not crossing the boundary. The boundary is what I'm going to do to take care of myself. And this is a really revolutionary shift around the way to think about this.
That is great. I mean, the way that you worded that, nobody crosses our boundaries, we cross our own boundaries. That's so true. And it does put us in a position of empowerment and accountability as opposed to victim and getting to that cycle of resentfulness. And
exactly.
And curious to you, that was a great example and a great way to explain a boundary to someone and communicate that. Because again, this has not been taught to women.
Right.
And the way that you've explained that has really solidified how we are to communicate that to people. Going back a little bit, Nancy, you were talking about when you first learned to draw a boundary, obviously, you know, when you decided to leave your marriage. How did people respond to you? And how did this kind of impact your relationships with friends and family? I believe since then you've become a more skilled boundary drawer, but I'm curious to know how the initial response was, because I think that is the biggest fear and hesitation that we have to draw a boundary, the responses we get and the people-pleasing stuff that pops up for us. But go for it.
Right. And so this is why it's really important, again, to remember, not every boundary needs to be stated out loud, because even if it involves someone else, it's up to us. So part of that pushback we're fearing is really because we haven't yet solidified our own alignment with ourselves. So we're still fearing some kind of judgment coming at us from the outside. That judgment is still happening on the inside. There's some part of us that thinks we're not worthy or deserving of actually having what we want or having what we need. So it's always going to be an inside job here. The other piece of this, you know, we don't set boundaries because we fear conflict. And we think that stating our needs is inherently going to make conflict occur. So part of this is really being able to learn how to locate ourselves learning how to come back and stay over here instead of being in someone else's territory. This is, you know, looking at what our needs are, understanding that we all do have needs, and how do we begin meeting our own needs. Also understanding in whatever relationship we're setting boundaries inside of, whether it's intimate partnership, parents, kids, you know, work, whatever it is, the fear of conflict is really rooted in our fear that the relationship itself doesn't hold water. So if we're fearing conflict to such a degree, what we're really fearing underneath that is we don't actually have a stable, secure foundation in which to communicate in. And that's really the bigger issue.
So I want to bookmark that comment and come back to it, because you've done some gold there, Nancy. Going back to your first experiences of drawing boundaries, what was that like for you?
It was terrifying. I mean, for me, that particular incident, and I write about it a lot in my book, Jump and Your Life Will Appear, it took tremendous support from people around me in order to be able to set and hold the boundary. Yet what I found was that the longer I could set and maintain it, the more courageous and confident I became. So setting that first boundary actually gave me the chops to be able to continue setting more. And listen, when we show up in our strength and in our truth, it can be confronting for other people in our lives. And really what it might do is hold up a mirror to them about the way that they're not making changes in their own life. So the important thing to remember is that when we are coming from the place of sharing our truth, it's not our responsibility to manage anyone else's response to that. Their response is their responsibility to manage. All we really need to do is show up in truth.
Nancy, you talk a lot about authenticity, which you briefly touched on before when it came to drawing boundaries. There is a part of ourselves that is misaligned. Yeah. And, you know, that authenticity, you know, you've said before that people tend to feel that they have to hide an aspect of themselves to be fully loved and accepted, but you speak against that belief as well. So why do you think that so many people are afraid of showing up as their true selves? And, you know, how do we reprogram that internal messaging that we have to show up authentically?
Yeah. So, you know, it starts all the way back in childhood. It starts all the way back when we learn how to package ourselves to be digestible to someone else. We have a combination of beliefs that get imprinted on us. So when significant events occur, when we are young, when we're under the age of 10, significant events occur and we're not able to process and digest what's happening in a healthy way. We're kids. So we start drawing conclusions about ourselves. So this is where the beginning of the beliefs like, I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable, there must be something wrong with me. All of these beliefs begin at such a young age and they're not conscious. They're hidden, you know, they're hidden away. And yet they are the beliefs that drive the bus of our lives. And our beliefs are magnetic. So we draw toward us people, places, relationships, situations, circumstances that reinforce our beliefs, that corroborate what we believe about ourselves. We relate to our beliefs as if they're fact. And yet our beliefs are not fact. Our beliefs are simply long-held ideas about the way the world works and our role within it. The Genie Show.
Hey, sleepyhead. Why so sleepy? Oh, it's because your mattress is a bag of potatoes and scrap metal. You should try a Nectar mattress. With award-winning layers of comfort, you can sleep easy knowing you got incredible value. Mattresses start at just $499, and you get hundreds of dollars in accessories thrown in, as well as a 365-night home trial and a forever warranty. Go to NectarSleep.com.
The Genie Show, oh, our lonely days are gone. The shift has to happen internally around what we're believing. And the thing is, we have it backwards. We think someone or something outside of us is going to have us feel worthy or feel good. You know, we hitch our worthiness to other people's wagons all day long, or we find our worth and value based on what we do, produce, or achieve. And so the invitation really is to be able to come into the place where the only approval I'm seeking is mine. The external validation that we're chasing. I mean, I know I chased gold stars till the cows came home and I got them. But here's the thing. When you're chasing the gold stars, no amount is ever going to be enough.
I totally can relate to that. I love getting stickers as a kid. And right. I remember I used to fall asleep with them. And then when I'd shower, there'd be like a little circle mark left on my wrist. Because it's true. When you continually chase gold stars, you want that sense of achievement and external validation. And it's so true. And it's also somewhat, as humans, you know, we form a habit that is how we function. And it gets to a point where we have to really change that habit and reprogram ourselves. So it's a very good point there. I'm curious also too, Nancy, because I'm going to talk to you about reclaiming characteristics because it has to do with also reprogramming yourselves. You've said, and this is also obviously paraphrased, we disown the parts of ourselves that we don't want to be. And so we become righteous and defiant, saying, I am not that. Yet we draw in those who will trigger those qualities the most. I heard on the Hey Us radio podcast something that you disowned about yourself, which is the term lazy. Mm-hmm. This undoubtedly leads to overachieving and people-pleasing tendencies and being triggered by laziness in whatever ways it shows up in your life. So clearly with this being a tender pressure point for you, how has this affected your perspective on self-care and resting for yourself and for others too?
Yeah. So let me just back up and clarify this piece of, first of all, every quality we see in another person exists within us. So when we're being activated by someone, when we're being triggered by someone's behavior, we want to be able to locate the quality underneath the behavior and recognize that the trigger here is that I have disowned this part of myself, which is why I'm being so triggered by it in someone else. And the work here is in order to reclaim the lost parts of myself to actually own and integrate the disowned quality. So lazy was a very big one for me. And what did I do? I married a man who was like the dictionary definition of lazy. He didn't want to work. So it was very easy for me to say, well, I'm not lazy. I work like a dog. Quite frankly, I'm actually a workaholic. So I'm not lazy. I could keep disowning lazy because it's not about the behavior. It's about the quality. So we have to peel apart the behavior and the quality. And my presentation of lazy will not look like his. So my presentation of lazy won't look like not working. I have to locate lazy for me. So lazy for me is laying on the couch on a sunny, gorgeous afternoon, watching 5 episodes of my favorite show. I get to rest. I get to cry or laugh. I get to restore, refresh, resource. So there's a gift in all of these qualities that we've disowned. We also have to look at how have I been overcompensating so that no one would see this quality. And that's the overachieving or the workaholism. So no one would point a finger at me and say, she's so lazy ever, because I've built up this whole facade around it so no one can actually see the truth. And I don't even see the truth because I don't want to. And so what happens is, I can tell you, years ago, I could never say to you right here, right now, I am lazy, and have it be free flowing like that. Had I said it before, I would have been, you know, choking, I would have had hives, I would have been heart racing, I would have been like, no, I'm not, you know, but the truth is we're all the things. So I'm lazy and I'm overachieving. I'm both. And so when it comes to the self-care piece, lazy is a great access point for me to plug into and to remember, linking back to what I was saying before about the external validation and the approval. One of the reasons that super high achieving and highly competent women, especially, don't take good care of themselves is that there's no one there to give them the gold star for taking a bath. And so we actually need to be our own distributor of the gold star. We need to actually step in as the governing body of our care and the governing body of approval for ourselves.
Because to your point, Nancy, overachieving women, when it comes to doing work and comes to, they have a huge cup where they can hold space for so many achievements. Mm-hmm. So something as simple as taking a bath is not seen or programmed in us to be celebrated. It's seen as this is just another thing I'm going to tick off my to-do list and next. So it's so true what you said, like taking that time to pause, to give ourselves that gold star and to keep going. That's so true. I love that. I love the fact that, you know, you've shared so much about your journey and you've given us some really tangible tools to really reflect on, to be more empowered, draw boundaries and to be more nourishing towards ourselves. You worked at Hay House and clearly you would have been surrounded by some pretty inspiring individuals.
Yes.
I'm really, really curious to know about your company. Who are the five most influential people in your life that you spend most time with or allow yourself to hear and listen to a lot?
Yeah, I mean, certainly when I was at Hay House, I was extraordinarily close with Louise Hay and Wayne Dyer and Debbie Ford, Cheryl Richardson, and Carolyn Mace pops in there for me, Marion Williamson back in the day. Yeah, I was extraordinarily gifted with these relationships and true friendships. It was beautiful.
And now who do you see yourself surrounding yourself with? Obviously, we're all in isolation here going through COVID. But
yes. I am surrounded by no one.
Right.
Because I live alone.
Yeah.
I really have a very tight-knit group of friends. I'm actually not a very social person. It's so interesting. All the people who are like out in the world in a certain way, and yet I really am an introvert. And I really have a very small key group of people, my sister and a few close friends and a few people with whom, you know, who are on my team with whom I'm quite close. I really value the ability to be able to have the deep conversations, to be able to talk about what's really going on in my life or in the world or for someone else. And I don't really have relationships where it's small talk. I don't really have relationships that are quote unquote fun. I sort of have an across the board level of relationships where we can go deep.
So depth is something clearly, Nancy, that you value. Mm-hmm. And I'm the same as you. I love those fun conversations where we joke around and laugh, but the depth where those, we can sit here. I can imagine just the conversation we had is probably the tip of the iceberg for you. conversation with you. We'd go right in.
We would.
Are you the kind of friend, and I would assume being the fact that you are a coach, are you the kind of friend that is kind of, I want to use this term as respectfully as I can, is like a first responder when it comes to crisis? Do people call on you a lot?
Yes.
I thought so. I feel that about you.
Yes.
You probably hold space for that conversation as well. Nancy, this has been an amazing conversation. At the Ginny Show, we love to unpack how we can lead a happier, more joyous life. How do you do joy? Like, what is the definition of joy and happiness for you?
It's so interesting that you ask this and that this is really a cornerstone, because for most of my life, I felt very disconnected from the concept of joy or happiness or fun or play. And I really put a judgment around those things as being frivolous. And now I have such an appreciation for the gravity that they hold and the not even just importance, but how imperative they are for our life. So for me, I'm always going to bring the joy. The joy is always going to come back to nature. For me, being out, I live in Colorado, so I hike a lot and I'm out in nature a lot. I love my mountains. Joy is always going to be like a great meal with a good friend.
Yeah.
and travel once we can do that again. Yeah. And being able to be with my family. I'm really kind of like, I'm really sort of practical and I'm very
intentional,
but also I'm doing like, I'm making this motion with my hands that no one can see, but it's really just like, yeah, like I it's contained. So in other words, I'm not like this huge, big dreamer. I'm not someone who sits around and fantasizes about a lot of things, but I do think about the things that I really want and I'm intentional about the wanting of the joy with them.
I love that. Because sometimes I think when it comes to happiness and when it comes to joy, it's not necessarily about grandeur. Because you know, it's about exactly what you said, the hand gestures she was making for it, kind of like a circle and containment. But
yeah,
it's very intentional where, you know, you find your joy and that's something that you found to be uplifting and energizes you, which is 100% I agree. Joy is not, doesn't have to be big and grand. It can be something very personal.
And I will say that really, I mean, one of the most joyful things for me is literally waking up early and, you know, doing my morning practice and sitting and looking out my window and drinking my coffee and just like being in my own space in my own time. Seriously, that is joy.
I love that. Because that, one of my dear friends, Carly Fain, she calls a morning practice the roots to rise.
Yeah.
And that time is a ritual. It's sacred, you know, and it's sacred for you to set you up for the day. And obviously a great foundation to be able to draw boundaries, to have those empowered relationships. Your morning routine, Nancy, I love your morning routine in the fact that it begins the night before. And
yes.
I say this a lot too, because in order to have a morning routine, there are exceptions you have to make the night before, or boundaries, to use the terms that you have in place. For example, for me, if I am to be getting up at 5:30 every morning, I have to go to bed at a specific time. Otherwise, I won't wake up in the morning.
Same with me.
Yeah, there's things that I say yes, no, and maybe to the night before that might, you know, make my bedtime a little later. But one of the things you do as a routine as the night before is that you put your phone on airplane mode before bed.
I do.
Wow. I know that would make a lot of people anxious, because that's like, I'm sleeping, guys. Not even do not disturb. You're going full bad.
I go full airplane mode. I started doing this. I've been doing this for, I want to say, about 4 years.
Wow.
And I'm also very intentional. I'm also like, I'm always thinking about tomorrow morning to make the decisions for the night before. So I'm also an early riser and I'm early to bed. I mean, 9:30 is what time I go to bed. 10 o'clock is my wall. I mean, there's no chance in hell I'm awake past 10. But 9:30 is generally lights out. And I'm up, I'm up 5:30. And I put the phone in airplane mode. So I wake up the next morning and I'm also very routinized about, I meditate, I journal, I drink a big mason jar of hot lemon water. Then I have my coffee. Then I put my phone back on Wi-Fi so that I'm deciding when I want to engage with the world instead of having the world coming at me. I will say I do not have children. So I have had conversations with clients who have done the do not disturb, or have done the thing, the do not disturb with just the kids being able to come through, or, you know, different workarounds. For me, I do have parents who are older. And so that's still something, but they know my phone's in airplane mode. They know to call my sister.
Yeah.
So for me, it lets me wake up and have my nervous system neutral.
That's so important. That's so important. Even for me too, like when I read that you put it on airplane mode, I'm like, oh, she's a badass. I don't know if I could go that far yet, but you know.
I'm just curious, like, what, tell me what's the resistance, or what holds you back?
Because I'm from Australia and I live in New York, I have family members. So my mum is elderly. So, you know, if she needs, if something happens, if my sister needs to call me. And also, you know, I have a friend here in New York who also, if there's anything that happens, she can call me. So that's the fear around it. And I know, Nancy, sometimes when I explain this fear to certain people, they're like, and what happens when you wake up? Nothing happens. Like, it's, everything is still like working.
And
the world
is, and this is why our boundaries are our own. you know? So it works for me and it doesn't work for you. And there's no reason it needs to.
Yeah.
You just need to do what works for you.
100%.
100%.
Yeah. Well, Nancy, thank you so much for spending time with me today. I'm so glad that I'm in my yoga position because I felt like I've just got 36 minutes of divine download and all the coaching and energy that I need to kind of go about my day. You've been an absolute joy. Please tell the good people of The Ginny Show where we can find you and connect with you.
Everything is on my website, nancylevin.com, books, and my Facebook group, my coaching program, social media, everything's there.
Wonderful. Make sure you check her out. Those links will be in the show note resource section. This is Nancy Levin on The Ginny Show. Thank you all for listening. The Ginny Show. Oh, how long it takes, I've gone on.
The Scrabble Go Guide to Learning New Words. Quizzical, your dad's face when he hasn't got enough vowels. Skeptical, your mom's face when you try to say small is a word. Belligerent, how your brother feels when he doesn't win. Vocabulary, what you all build when you play Scrabble Go together. Everyone's a winner with Scrabble Go, the fun brain training game you can play with family and friends wherever you are. Available on Android and iOS. Download Scrabble Go today.